Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey guys, it's JVL. I sat down with the Anklers, Richard Rushfield, today, and we talked about all of the stuff. We hit Jimmy Kimmel, we hit the Trump of it all, we hit fascism, did a little bit on the F word there. And then we ended up in a long conversation about the differences between this moment and the 1920s. It's actually a pretty interesting talk. I think you might get something from it. Here's the show.
I think we have a quorum here. We may officially begin our proceedings. I am thrilled. This is someone when I started the lunch who on my very, very short list of people that I want to have in. And as it turned out, the gods had pointed it towards this could not be a more fitting day as our two worlds collide. I'm speaking of the editor, one of my true heroes of this era. I mean, there haven't been a lot of guys come out of this era, but what John and the Last at the Bulwark have done, building up and just being absolutely consistent in their opposition to what's happening here has been, it has been my survival guide to the last, how many years have we been dealing with all this now?
We're in year 9, buddy.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's too many.
There's at least 3.5 more.
I'm thrilled. maybe not for me, but we'll see. So it's fitting we had you in here today because with the news last night about Jimmy Kimmel, Hollywood, including myself, drew a column about it, is in something of a full blown panic and freak out, tempered by total defeatism and catastrophism, and give up. So I'm right here, the man from Washington, that you can tell us, hey, this is, I know cloture votes seem like a big thing, but this is just the process, and don't worry your pretty little heads about it. It works itself out and everything's fine. So you're here to reassure us that it's all going to be just fine, right?
I mean, sure. In the long run, everyone's dead. We're all food for worms. But this is what Hungary looked like a decade and a half ago, right? This is how it goes. It just is fascism. Molly White, who's a very funny tech reporter, put something out on social, and she's like, if only we had a simple one-word term to describe anti-fascism. But this is, this is how, again, nobody should be surprised. One of the things people actually talked about in January of this year was, we'll see how our late night comedians handle the turn, America's turn into authoritarianism. And 2 of the 4 of them have now lost their jobs. I should say that's not true. Kimmel maybe Kimmel survives, but his contract is up in 2026. Does anybody think he can re-sign with ABC? I don't.
I mean, very difficult to see him coming back and just happily leading the late night slot for ABC after this. That would be awkward, shall we say.
I want to put it, what's really dangerous about this, Richard, I mean, the whole thing is dangerous, but I was going to say what's really alarming is that the extortion didn't have to be done in the shadows, right? The FCC chairman didn't have to, do a dead drop, have a courier drop a message with a fish wrapped in newspaper to Bob Iger or something. He was able to just go on a podcast and say, this is what we want you, the local affiliates, to do. This is what we want you, ABC, Disney, to do. And if you don't do it, there are consequences. And the fact that they are they feel as though they are able, and they are in fact able, to carry out these threats in public shows how strong their position is. They don't have to hide.
So what I wrote today is in all my sort of, I'm a history person, so I've been making concocting scenarios of when the fascists come to power for since I was a child here. But and none of them do all the good progressives and all the blowhards and everyone else in Hollywood just say, oh, all right. Oh, you want that? Yeah, sure. Done. You got it.
Turns out that's how it really does work. Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, there'd be someone setting up a little barricade on some, you know, second tier street there or that, but no, in the Disney, Brent Carr made these insane statements and the Next Star people who provoked this have this big I think it's a $6 billion merger pending right now.
Yeah.
Just for the last month, and he's it's the money, it's the fealty, it's everything. I'm searching for a little ray of light, but at least it's not. I mean, so what would you say when people say?
I'm sorry, Richard. You have come to the wrong person. If you're looking for rays of light, buddy.
I know. I'm aware.
Sorry.
But what would you say, coming from Washington, there are people here who, fellow columnists of mine, who I'm sure will write on this very day, look, it seems like a big deal, but the late night shows weren't working out. They're really not. And not, in truth, I never watched them. You know, the average audience is 170 years old. And the damage that could be done from a big fight with the FCC and your affiliates is enormous. So if you're planning to remove these shows, what's the harm of just doing that a year earlier than you were planning to?
Yeah, well, I mean, the harm is that you either have to maximally capitulate or at some point you have to fight, right? And so every business has to decide, well, which is it, right? Are they going to, at some point, try to maintain independence from the regime or not? And many will decide there's no reason to have independence from the regime because the regime is so transactional. We can simply go along, get along, right? So long as we do what we're, so long as we, like Tim Cook, make up some big gold award and give it to Trump, then we'll basically be able to get what we want. And if your company can do that, then you don't ever need to fight, right? If you don't care. Yeah. But if you think that there are parts of your business that you want to control, like, for instance, the creative output of your animated film division or the hiring practices at your theme parks,
mm-hmm.
At some point, the regime is going to want to have a say on those things, too. And so this is why I just feel like if you're Disney and you think that this is the easy way, I mean, you're fucking stupid.
Well,
you know, like you're going to have to fight this eventually. You might as well fight it over Jimmy Kimmel right here when everybody's watching it.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I think they thought settling the Stephanopoulos suit was the easy way. Like, we're settled. We're good with these people. They know they know they can do business with us. It's fine. And I, you know, Hollywood, for the first time in its history, Hollywood has been strangely silent on everything that has happened. I mean, Hollywood goes to the ramparts like every time, you know, someone misuses a semicolon in this world. But for the last 8 months here, they've had virtually nothing to say. Certainly the other division. And I have been writing if you think Hollywood is not on the list of priorities, you are out of you're off your rocker.
Damn mind, right? And you're out of your mind if you think that. And the fact that Hollywood has been eaten by tech to the extent which what you've been writing about now for a decade, and that tech has consolidated so much into, you know, the big four or five, although I guess you count OpenAI as among that now, right? David Ellison is now going to own a big part of Hollywood. It is unclear if he has like ideological sympathies with Mark Andreessen or if he's just looking to make moves on the street and thinks that this is the, you know, these are the guys who you have to accommodate at this point. But this stuff is all, it's all coming. It's all coming down like a mountainside. And I would say this, looking for dissent is actually a pretty good proxy for how serious the threats are. Because when the threats are not especially serious, everybody dissents because it's free, right? There's no price to be. And look, I am not a defender of George W. Bush. I didn't like George W. Bush. But the truth is that people were able to jump up and down and scream about George W. Bush because they knew that George W. Bush was never going to send masked agents to their house to arrest them.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why you understood that you don't like it. You think things are bad, et cetera, et cetera. But you aren't actually in anything like fascism. This is not an authoritarian state. He's not going to stay in power for forever. There is much less dissent now because people understand that there are stakes. And it isn't free. You don't get to just say stuff and understand that your livelihood isn't going to be affected. Your freedom isn't going to be affected. You saw what J.D. Vance said last night, right?
Yeah.
You've seen what Pam Bondi said about how they were going to, I'm speaking off the cuff. Somebody said that they will take your property, take your employment, and if you've broken the law, take your freedom, right? This is, yeah, that's just textbook authoritarianism, right? And they're saying this isn't even about the law, right? We'll use the law as a pretext to jail you if we can, but we're going to use the power of government to ruin your life in every other vector just because. And we can. How are you going to stop us? Oh, is it Stephen Miller? Yeah. Thank you, guys.
God bless him. Native grew up a mile
from one of your people. Now, so. Yeah. Yeah. Yikes.
For 30 years now, I've been saying whenever Hollywood made a stink about some cause, I've been saying, my general advice has been shut the hell up and write checks. Because when Hollywood opens its mouth, it has an unnatural ability to do harm to its own cause. And certainly there's nothing that Trump would love more than make this a fight between him and some actor, some movie star. But, you know, for 30 years, they never took my advice about this. And now they're taking my advice, strangely. But is that... I mean, are we at the case? Are we at the place now where there is no, like, everything helps, and there's no, their silence doesn't do any good. Even if, you know, given if Hollywood starts talking, they will say some very stupid thing. They're going to come out of their mouth. So what's the best route for us?
So, I don't know that there is anything affirmative that any of us can do to stop this train, because the problem, the root of the problem, is that the American people are rotten. The American people wanted this. They voted for it. Donald Trump did not hide the football. He did not pretend that he was going to do something different. He talked about all of this shit constantly.
I will be your vengeance.
And half of the people, in a time where everything was great, we were not in a Great Depression. We, you know, unemployment, historic lows for like 36 months. We had 14 months of inflation, but that was long in the rearview mirror. Everybody had jobs. Everybody's stock portfolios were doing great. Was life difficult in many ways? Yes. Is life in America difficult in many ways at all times and in all places? You better fucking believe it. Put on your big boy pants. This is life. This is a show. You know, like, these fucking people are like the price of eggs. Let's fucking get bent. And in the case where there was no war, there was no depression, there was nothing like that, the American people were like, looked at Trump, having seen him, having watched a million people die the way he handled COVID and heard how he campaigned, and they said, we'd like that, please. And now, as it's all happening, his approval is still like 44, 42%. And this is why I say, if the country is like that, then there is no way out. Right. I mean, if people, if 40% of the country wants this, then we are going to get it.
Why is 40% is not 51%? Why is that enough to say?
Because you need 50% if you are waging war, political war, on accepted liberal democratic grounds. If you are attempting authoritarianism, history is replete with examples that, you needed 20,000 communists to take over Russia, right, for the Russian Revolution. You do not, if you are using illiberal means, not need 51%. 40% of America, hell, if it's 20% of America who wants fascism, they're going to get it, because 20% of 340 million is a lot of fucking people.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Yeah, and so, but here's what I'd say to people to answer your question. Does going out and protesting and making speeches and whatnot, is that going to help? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. The only thing I can say is, and this is the Timothy Snyder thing, do not surrender in advance. And don't surrender when they come to push you. Make them fight for every inch of ground. This is the big thing, right? And this is why I just think, if you're Disney, just from your own perspective, like, you have to think that history ends this afternoon. Yeah. In order to make the decision you made yesterday and think that that's where you come out on the black, right? If you are looking at all into like the next year, 2 years, 3 years, you have to realize that putting up a fight is where your advantage is, because that's the only way you have any leverage, right? The only leverage you have is if you're fighting and pushing back. So like, don't surrender in advance. Do not be part of this. And the other stuff is, to the extent that you can hurt individual people, like the Tesla boycott was enormously helpful, like an incredibly successful operation. To the extent that you can organize in ways that, I see people saying we canceled Disney Plus.
So would a Disney Plus Hulu boycott, do you think that's?
I don't know. I kind of think no, but I would not go to Disney World. Right. And I think the theme parks are probably a little softer targets economically than streaming services are. But also those are hard because that's a corporation, right? It's a big, it's easier to hurt Elon Musk by driving down the stock, the price of the stock, which is the backbone of his fortune.
Yeah.
If there are ways you can find to protest there, and I would say then the other thing is like mass mobilizations and protests, you should take part in those. So like the No Kings protests, like the, you know, at the end of the day, history suggests that these things are only ever really stopped by just bodies, right?
Yeah.
Masses of bodies. And so, you know, does it help posting something on Instagram, or having an actor come out and say, like, I don't know, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But the other stuff, being part of mass movements like People Power, that's very important. And not surrendering and forcing the bad guys to fight, very important.
That's good to hear. Gives a path to salvage self-respect, if that's something else. I've suggested some alternative paths Disney could have gone on. I mean, they spent the last 10 years building up this giant screening service for streaming service for at billions of dollars cost and massive disruption. So if all their affiliates say they don't want him, just say, okay, we'll put them on Hulu. Great. We'll keep them going there. Or they can alternately tell the FCC, go ahead, pull ABC's license. See, Let's see who the American public likes better, Abbott Elementary or Brendan Carr. Let's put that to a test here.
I mean, honestly, here's what I don't understand. If you're Nexstar, right, you need Disney content much more than Disney needs your carriage fees, don't they?
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So again, this is Disney not understanding where their leverage lies is, I think, just a strategic miscalculation. And you're absolutely right. They should be used. I mean, the FCC doesn't have a lot of say over like streaming, right?
Yeah.
It's not on Spectrum. It's a, you know, so.
But imagine Brendan Carr went through with this and he said, we are canceling the broadcast license for ABC. And ABC goes off the air. And
have that fight.
Where's that leave Nexstar?
I would much rather have that fight if I was Disney than have this fight that they're having now, having caved.
But the problem is, so we've had three incidents. They had the Stephanopoulos suit, we had the 60 Minutes suit, and then we had the Colbert thing. And every one of them, the CEOs who made the decision paid no price whatsoever. Like the people, there was a day of Blue Sky hated them for a day. And if they didn't click on Blue Sky that day, they wouldn't have even noticed that anyone cared about anything they did. We need to tell them that there's some sort of, that there needs to be some sort of counter pressure. How about the Progressive affiliate owners, if there's still any out there threatening to pull Disney or something like that. There's nothing on the other side that makes them.
Part of it is that we do have a concentration of oligarchs who are basically fascist curious, right? Or at least who are not opposed to fascism because they believe that they can prosper under it, right? I mean, Tim Cook does not seem especially alarmed about any of this. He seems to think that Apple's going to be able to operate pretty well. Mark Zuckerberg seems to have figured out how to work. Elon Musk was allowed to run the American government for 3 months. And so this is, a lot of this, I don't want to sound like a commie. The concentration of wealth is a real problem. Like, it's a real problem. And I just don't know that there's any way out of that, at least not in the near term.
And I think people have I think the sense of what Hollywood is, that it's all these commies running around and running their film studios and just sneaking in liberal messages is very, I kind of did a back of the envelope of all the cameras rolling today around the world paid for by Hollywood. I'm just 70 when you put Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and now Paramount. In the tech thing, I'll bet 70% of them are funded by the tech world. So we're a vassal state now. That's not.
Oh yeah.
And for Disney, who I think is, I have predicted for years now, is considering going down that route or hoping to go down that route. This is all part. They can't just sit that out, and then you will be left with two studios, Universal and Sony, that will be independent of that. So the tech world's priorities are what we have to live with here, and my sense is those priorities are not very good.
I mean, at best, they are purely mercenary, and at worst, they are interested in a kind of feudalism that is antithetical to the American experience. I don't know what else to say about that. Is that crazy? Is that a crazy thing to say?
No, because it feels like they're in just like almost the mopping up phase of the war. All the different industry. I'm talking to Urban Met Solar, who's having a meeting with the dentists. The dentists, they're buying up all the dentist's office, and all the dentists are going to become tech employees. It's like, I mean, I we're the entire economy is on the road to being, under the control of 10 people or something.
Yeah. Well, and this is a thing which happens under fascism, right? Because so when you are in a liberal democracy, liberal democracies depend on robust capitalist free market systems that have lots of competition. And so because you need prosperity, right? And competition is the backbone of prosperity. And so there are lots of incentives in, and when I say liberal democracy, I just mean like everything in America prior to 2016.
Yeah.
I mean, under Reagan, under Clinton, under FDR, all of it. And when, so there's incentives to keep consolidation at bay, at least a little bit. Once you wind up in a fascist or authoritarian system, the incentives all go the other way because the authoritarian leaders need the business community to be loyal. They don't need prosperity. They need like a very bare minimum level of prosperity to keep people from having bread riots. What they need is loyalty from the business class. And so one of the ways to get loyalty is to give away consolidation. And like, this is just where we are, and it's been speeding up. And I don't know, it's all very bad. I mean, we're gonna have Mark Andreessen and David Ellison owning TikTok. I'm sure that'll be fine. Like, you know, how's that gonna work going into the 2026 election?
This Hydra they're building, it feels like there's some sort of plan behind it, and can't quite get what it is except conquering the world. I want to talk to you though about your experience, because you were many of these people, these were your friends and colleagues and co-religionists or whatever you call it, fellow wound. What is it like to see people just turn into the body snatchers? What has that all been like? Like, how do you understand what's happened to these people? What is your
feelings? So it's weird as shit. It's not a lot of fun. I would say for people who don't know me, which I assume is 98% of the people who are your audience. So I spent literally my entire adult life at the Weekly Standard. I showed up there like in year three, I think, and I stayed there until it was shut down. I was never Republican, like really never Republican. I am not a joiner. I don't, I voted for God knows, voted for John Kerry. And I was conservative, but my conservatism is really like deeply temperamental. My view is that however bad things are right now, they are probably going to get worse. And so we should try to preserve the status quo before, because whenever you try to improve things, you often wind up with unintended consequences. And I'm Catholic, but also I believe in then all the social justice stuff about like, feeding the hungry and clothing the poor and welcoming the prisoner and the immigrant and stuff. So I always sat in like a weird, uneasy place in the way that like social justice Catholics do. I don't know. A lot of it is I have realized a bunch of things that were true about the world that I just didn't realize when I was younger. One of which is like the centrality of race in understanding anything about American politics. How I missed that. Beyond me. I mean, it was just fucking stupid and sheltered.
Do you think in the people who were actually around you, who you work with, who have gone over to that side, that was the sort of latent issue for them?
No, I think that was a latent issue that was bubbling underneath that created the popular support for MAGA, is what I think. Does your guest support democracy? Google me, Laura. You will find that out. But the other thing is I came to realize that for many of the people I knew, and not all of them, and frankly at the Weekly Standard, I mean, God, but my hero at the Weekly Standard was Bill Kristol. I've been working with Bill Kristol since I was 22. I'm 51 now. Bill wasn't like this. Like Bill has always believed shit, and his beliefs are sincere. And when he's right, he's sincerely right. And when he's wrong, he's sincerely wrong. And Bill was exactly who I thought he was, and that has been incredibly reassuring. And many of my Weekly Standard colleagues were like that. A few were not. But in general, within the conservative world that I was sort of, you know, covalent with, a lot of those people turned out to not believe in anything. Like, for them, it was just like a job, I guess. And when the job allowed advancement to, like, go and do something else, they were just happy to do that. And that has also been true of the voters. Like, the voters turn out to, at least Republican voters, turn out to not believe any of the shit that they've been saying. And there are a lot of lessons for us here. One of which is, I mean, this is probably not of interest to your audience, but I'll say it anyway. A big part of what happened has to do with the collapse of institutional power. And the biggest of those has to do with the political parties. Because it turns out that what the political parties did was they prevented people from being allowed to choose fascism. And, you know, I assume, it being Hollywood, maybe this is prejudicial, I'm sorry if it is, that many of your people in your audience are not Republicans and have never liked Republicans.
I think we can say that.
But the truth of the matter is that the Republican Party prevented Republican voters from being allowed to choose a fascist as president for a really long time. And this is because the party had various levers of power and ways to prevent the Republican voters from fully expressing what they want. And then it turned out that, you know, and this happened, the party process starts getting opened up in 1976, right, with Carter, and it becomes more and more democratized. The parties begin to lose power. As the parties lost power, it turned out that when you allowed Republican voters to have the full say over this, and you really marginalized the power of the party itself, then voters got to choose Donald Trump, and they really, really wanted it. They really, really wanted it. And that's, I don't know how you put that genie back in the bottle, right? Because all of the people in the Republican Party have, like, they got the message, right? They've seen what their voters want. And I don't think it's a one-off. If you wanted to be optimistic, you could say Donald Trump occupies a unique place in America because he was famous for 40 years, and that this is more about celebrity and cultural muscle memory than fascism. Most people are stupid. Most people are not particularly engaged. They think he's a businessman, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My work wife, Sarah Longwell, gives this as the bull case for America often. I don't think I buy that. Like, I'm not convinced it's wrong, but if you forced me to bet a dollar, I wouldn't bet on that proposition. I would take the opposite, which is that a determinative percentage of the Republican cohort has now seen fascism and likes it, and that fascist tendencies used to be equally distributed among the electorate in the same way that, like, conspiracy theorists were equally distributed among the electorate. And like anti-vaxxers were equally distributed among the electorate. And those three things, both anti-vax sentiment, conspiracy theorizing, and affinity for fascism, have all now coalesced and polarized on one side in the Republican Party. Mm. And with that, like, how are you going to get them to choose liberalism again? Like, I just, like, they don't want it. It's not that they're deceived. It's not that they don't understand. I think they do. They just don't like it. And I don't know. So, I don't know where to go from there.
Well, my unsatisfying response to that, because it's probably much too late and much too little to be talking about things like this. But, you know, when you talk about how people that you knew, for in the end, it was just a job for them. It was just about career advancement. You know, here, similar in Hollywood, I thought we all loved movies. I thought we all loved entertaining. I thought that was why you came here, instead of going into pharmaceuticals or petroleum or God knows what else. Turns out, people just wanted to build big companies and then hopefully sell them. And for a long time, I've been writing about this way before Trump, that, you know, stock price became, you know, it wasn't even a movie being a hit anymore. It was the stock price became everything to an entertainment company. Just became a, so it's, the world lost its meaning. The people driving it had no sense of purpose or meaning. And every, and it, it, this time of like just nihilism and, you know, the, I call it the fire hose, that you just get stuff spewed over you just to, so the new agey answer is somehow find a way to restore meaning to the world. And that's where you build up from. I have no idea how you do that, but
yeah. Well, I mean, the other optimistic case, I'll try to give you some optimism, is that we have been to a similar place once before in American history. There's a really good book called The Age of Acrimony. I would highly recommend you guys reading it. It's sort of that post-Civil War period when we actually almost fought another civil war. Things were very unhappy. We were at each other's throats. America was very divided. And then it all just kind of went away. And this is, so you know in Shakespeare in Love,
yeah,
that scene with Geoffrey Rush and Tom Wilkinson when he, you know, he's like the inevitable path, you know, the course of every production is inevitable, insurmountable obstacles on the way to inevitable ruin. Is that somebody in the...
Yeah, that sounds right.
Right? And then he says, so what do we do? And Geoffrey Rush says, you know, funnily enough, we do nothing. He says, well, why, how does it... It's a mystery. You know, it all works out as a mystery. And it is possible that... You just look at this from a systems point of view. Culture is an ecosystem that is so big that there are no buttons really that we can push. There are no levers to pull. And that these things will just work themselves out. And that is deeply unsatisfying because that is a sort of like, well, we all fight as hard as we can and either it works out or it doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't love that as an answer, but I also fear that that may be the answer.
I mean, what was...
I don't know. What do you think?
What's the Churchill said, God protects children
drunks in the United States of America.
That's America. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of my hope there, that there's a divine providence that wants us to see it. And you talk about this a lot. I mean, there is something satisfying to, like, you talk about the hot stove scenario, telling people, no, you don't want to touch that stove. You don't want to touch the to saying finally, like, okay, you want to see it? Go ahead, touch the stove. Let's see.
Yeah. How it goes. I mean, I will say this also, in American history, we do not often solve our problems, right? Like we get a problem for a generation and there's never really a resolution to it. We just sort of bulldoze over it and build our next set of problems on top of it. You know, yeah. So I mean, when I say, I look at this and I don't understand how it gets fixed, like, well, maybe it doesn't get fixed. It just sort of, we move on. You know what I mean? Like, there's no Truth and Reconciliation Commission. There's no, you know, like, things just go back to normal-ish. Maybe, again, this is, I'm grasping at straws here, Richard.
Well, so the one thing that I see in Hollywood where we're very interested in casting, I look at a conversation between J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller and just say, neither of these BDI weirdos are ever going to win a national election, even a fixed national election, for anything. And a party that's putting like a little Renfield person out, like Stephen Miller out there in public it might be in a good place now, but they're not, that's not playing to win. It's a way, and I just, and just, you know, what is it? Russia, they always depended on Colonel Winter would come. And for me, Colonel Winter is like their incompetence, like that they, everything they touch, they will, if they decide that they want to repaint crosswalks, they will screw it up somehow. They will, every crosswalk will go diagonally and the lines will, that's my hope, that they will so deeply screw up everything that they come into contact with, because even very smart people with good intentions who try to do things in government usually fail.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot to that. And I would say the nature of their coalition has a contradiction built into the heart of it, which is that Donald Trump is not a Republican. He did a hostile takeover of the Republican Party. He has spent most of his time in the public spotlight waging war against the Republican Party. We have seen in election after election that his voters will turn out for him, but they won't turn out for other Republicans. They view him as separate from the Republican Party and not part of the system. His voters are the least educated and the least engaged people. They have the lowest propensity to turn out. Like it does. So how does that transfer, right? And so my thesis has long been that because it doesn't transfer, the Republican Party will understand that it has to run Trump again in 2028. And I promise you the Supreme Court will let them. I promise you that. And if Donald Trump wants to run, then the Supreme Court will let him. How it happened is that what the Constitution is what five people says it is. And that's how it happens.
Why is John Roberts, when you get down to something like that, that is really just like day and night, like we have?
Because he is concerned about popular legitimacy. And if he was going to take the ability to choose Donald Trump out of the hands of voters, he had three opportunities to do it before now. You know, he's not going to do it in 2028. But the other option then, should Trump be incapacitated or did he decide that he can't do it again, is Don Jr. And if you asked me to go bet a dollar who the next Republican nominee is, I would say it'll be somebody named Donald Trump, either with Jr. after his name or not, because dynasty is the only other answer to this problem for the Republican Party. So
you have a better version of Don Jr. who's called Tucker Carlson.
You do, but he isn't actually dynastic, you know, like, yeah. Again, just have it. Again, history is replete with the Perones. And, you know, if you have somebody with the same name, it's very powerful.
Is there a Trump that Carl Tucker could marry and then change his name to hers? And the Roman Empire, the emperors would adopt
the names of the old Caesar.
They would adopt their young proteges as their child, and they would be like Augustus was adopted by Julius there.
I think that's unlikely. I think it's unlikely.
Can I give you? I have a few wild plans, but I feel like they could work. And can I just bounce on them? Shoot them down, but if they're good, take them to Washington. And
okay.
I was just up in Toronto in Canada for the film festival, and the proposition that I put to my friends up there, some local film critics, was, maybe you were a little quick to say no to that idea of joining the American Union here, that if we suddenly have Canada absorbed, that will tip the balance in a big way, and no MAGA person will ever win again. And not to your interest to have a failed state of 300 million people to your south. So maybe you consider taking him up on it. What do you think of that?
I think unlikely that Canada would ever decide to do that, and also unlikely that, we live in an age of minority rule. I do not believe if Canada came tomorrow to the Trump administration and said, we're in, let's do this thing, it will be gerrymandered in such a way as to make sure that it does not impact the long-term staying power of the Republican Party. I promise you that.
I said the pill they should put in, and this will actually fix everything, is they should say, we will come aboard, we'll join you, all government activities have to be held in French. From now on, the government is just in Britain. And I think that would end up fixing the down the road. That would. My other long-term plan is, I'm sorry, this wouldn't help you, but or you come join us, is for Southern California to secede and take with it Las Vegas, Hawaii, and Baja would secede from Mexico and join us, and that we could be one entertainment and resort land. And I think that's a very viable country there.
I think unlikely, but I would not. I believe that if we get out of this fix that we're in right now, a bunch of very structural changes to the way the American political system works are going to have to happen. And I believe the expansion of the Supreme Court is going to be part of that. And adding states is going to be part of that. Because there is just no other way to have long-term stability until you reduce the power of the minority to attempt authoritarian takeovers of the country. And so California being split in two, absolutely on the table. DC statehood, I mean, DC statehood is just going to happen, I think. If there is ever another case where we have Democrats holding power, and maybe that won't happen, Puerto Rico becomes on the ballot. I just think there are a whole bunch of very big structural changes which people will wind up having to get their heads around, because you can't run a free society where every 4 years, this is, you know, paraphrasing whatever the French foreign minister, where every 4 years, whether or not you're going to attempt to become fascist is dependent on 40,000 people in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You can't live like that.
Is there something positive too that from the, that, you know, there's a lot of problems in the country, and, you know, the college admissions thing, which you and I have children that need to think about, that is a profoundly broken thing. And I don't like the way Trump has attacked college universities at all. But from the rubble of this, we can fix these sort of intractable problems that seem like they're everywhere in our society. You know, when we get somehow to the other side, is that a bright side we might look forward to?
I mean, this is what Mamdani is selling, right? Yeah. This is the young progressive pitch to America is, look, we got to focus on what we're going to build next, because we're gonna out of the rubble, we're going to build something better and more sustainable. And I just don't think that that's a view of how mature societies typically work. I don't think new stuff really ever gets built in mature society, right? It's like mature companies versus, you know, stage one companies. And so, you know, maybe we'll try, maybe we'll make a run at it. Maybe we'll start taxing the highest like 50 people in America in ways to discourage the concentration of wealth. Maybe we will nationalize SpaceX, which is just something that obviously should happen. It was an enormous mistake to privatize the aerospace industry in that way. But I don't really buy that argument that, like, you know, oh, from the ashes, it'll get better. I think the best case scenario is just that we all find a way to muddle through. And that when you look back on American history, most of the time, what you would describe, if you could describe it extemporaneously and not looking back through the long lens, is things weren't great, but people found a way to muddle through. I mean, one of the reasons I say that, like, race, the centrality of race to American history was just utterly lost on me. So I believed all of the shining city on a hill bullshit. And I believed all of the, and so I, you know, when the Trump thing started happening, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. America's going to stop being free, you know? And it took a minute, because, again, because I'm an idiot, like, African-Americans are like, oh, really? Welcome to the party. You know, we were slaves in this country. And even then, after slavery, it was 5 minutes ago that we didn't have authoritarian systems of government systematically attempting to repress us in, like, violent ways, attached also to legal strictures through half the country. You know, it hasn't always been a shining city. Like, all of these, again, this is, I'm just like telling you 2 + 2 = 4. And you're like, yeah, sure. Right. Mm-hmm. Obviously. But because I'm an idiot, I didn't realize this stuff. And so things are always a little bit fraught. And I feel like the best we can really hope is like Ed Harris in Apollo 13, when he's, you know, that scene in Mission Control when everything's going wrong and he just sort of puts his head in his hands and he goes, what do we got on the spacecraft that's good. That's where I am, like, about America right now. Like, you know, everything is bad. What do we got on a spacecraft that's good? And what we have is an economy that is still functioning at a very, very high level, even though it's tipping into recession. We still have pretty good R&D and education, although that's all under assault, right? We still have excellent public health. That's a problem. I mean, you see what I'm saying? Like, all the things that I'm telling you we have that are good are things which are currently today on September 18th under active assault by the Trump administration. So, like, I don't know where it goes from there.
What, bring us home here. You've had to live with this every day for 9 years and see your old friends, have their bodies snatched and all this. How do you stay sane during this? If you have, what is the happy place you're able to go to shake this off for a few minutes and keep going?
Boy, I mean, I don't ever, like, I just don't turn it off. I do this 18 hours a day, and that's not true. I'm not doing this 18 hours a day, but, like, you know, I do two things in my life. I do this and I do my kids and my family, and, like, there aren't, I don't do anything else. I don't build model ships. You know, I don't have any hobbies. This is, you know,
you define baseball. Baseball is someone you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have it on in the background, but it's, you know, I don't get to a lot of games anymore. And I don't know. Like, I feel like this is important. It's real. It isn't politics as game. It's not a thing where we're in this bouncy house where the Constitution is going to protect us and nothing truly bad can ever happen. We have federal officers in masks without badges kidnapping people off the street. I mean, this is as real as it gets. And I would say this to your audience. Think back, have a real honest conversation with yourself. And think back to January 20th of this year and what you thought the worst case scenario would look like by mid-September. So after 9 months, what did you think by 9 months it would look like? I'm a pretty dark guy, and I know what I thought it would look like because I wrote a piece about this. And we are way past what I thought the worst case scenario was.
I would have said they'll try to do a lot of things, but not really. It'll be more noise, and in the end, they'll be just sort of flailing.
Yeah, it's worse. So I don't know what to tell people on how to not. I would say don't take a job where you have to do this every day, like I did.
that's
my best advice, right? So
that's excellent advice. Final question for you, our big final question. All our guests are given the opportunity to assign reading to everyone who works in entertainment, what these people should know to be citizens of entertainment and of America and of the world. This is required reading. They will be tested on this, or viewing, whichever you care to, or can be a walk-ish take. I give the floor to you, your syllabus for Hollywood, Jonathan V. Last.
I have an answer that you guys aren't going to like. Sorry. The book Witness by Whitaker Chambers. So Whitaker Chambers is, this is like a big 80s and 90s conservative touchstone. But let me explain to you why. So Whitaker Chambers is a guy who comes out of the communist movement. He is a member of the Workers' Party. He is a Red. He is sort of a Soviet style agent. And he switches sides. He's also a writer and an essayist. He switches sides and then goes, and this is at the height of the Red Scare, is naming names, and he names Alger Hiss as a high-level Soviet agent within the State Department. There is a long trial over this. Chambers testifies, names Hiss. We do find out later that Hiss was, in fact, stone-cold guilty. And Chambers writes his memoir about his life and his experience. Here's why I would tell you guys to read it, even though I know you are going to say no, thank you, pass. I found the explanations of why he became a communist to be unbelievably compelling. And they all had to do with the First World War. I really believe that Americans are blind to the centrality of the First World War in getting us to where we are now. World War One, much, much more important than World War II, much more determinative than World War II. Because the scale of the slaughter and the senselessness of the slaughter, it was an accidental conflagration. It was like somebody set the entire fucking world on fire because they just fell asleep holding a cigarette in bed. It made everybody, an entire generation of people, terrified that it could happen again. And they reached for anything they could grab onto. And this is why the world split into fascists and communists. It wasn't because these were people who just naturally wanted authoritarianism, although we now know, you know, some of them were, yeah. But the reason it became broadly popular, both fascism and communism at that moment in time, was because people thought the old system didn't work. Millions of people just died in a blink. We can't do that again. We'll try anything to avoid doing that. And the reason I would tell you, I would tell people, go and read that. And now compare that to right now. Because right now, we have people choosing fascism and authoritarianism not being under duress, but it's just out of decadence, right? Things are basically as good as they've ever been. And so that difference, the difference between the world that Chambers and the people lived in the 20s and 30s, as they were going through this communist fascist divide, where you had, again, First World War followed by a Great Depression, you can see why people would choose things that turned out to be dangerous. Yeah. But over the last 10 years in America, to have the people of this country choose what they have chosen, it speaks to how totally different this moment is. And the reason I would tell you to go read Witness is so that you can really meditate on the difference in the situations, and that incongruity might help spark your thinking and understanding about why it is that we are where we are now, who our fellow citizens are, what they're really looking for. I'm not saying it'll give you answers. If I had answers, I would give them to you myself, but I don't. But I think Witness, and especially the sections leading up to and then going through like 1940. So if you don't want to read the whole book, you don't have to. But the first half especially is very, very helpful for understanding today, because not because it gives answers, but because it provides contrasts.
There you go, Hollywood. That is required. This will be counted towards your final grade. Thank you so much, JVL, for joining us. Incredibly clarifying, not the ray of sunshine, but makes sense of this moment to us. And best of luck there, and please keep yourself healthy and sane during we need you, and everyone here should subscribe to The Bulwark. It's really indispensable for them.
It's very nice of you to say. I would just say that I have been, I think I was probably one of the first 100 people to subscribe to The Ankler.
I think you may have been, yeah.
Before it was, and I am so inspired by what you guys have done. And I just, it's great. I love that you and The Ankler exist in the world, and I read it every day, and it makes me happy. So
you're too kind, and very much back to you. Thanks for coming, and we will talk soon. Good luck, everybody.